welcome to the 22nd episode of the Reckless Dice Podcast, where we discuss Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay 3rd Edition. I'm the co-founder of Reckless Dice and your host, Jesse Gitzman-Burke. Co-hosting with me is our lich-like troubadour, Lester Crowe, and his strolling bones. Great. Tonight we have our special guest and a friend of the show from across the pond, Ian Robinson. It's good to have you back.
Hello.
So everybody's pretty much aware that the Lure of Power has finally hit the shelves, one that we've all been waiting for, which is the last Chaos supplement, the Slaaneshi supplement, to kind of round out the four Chaos Gods. And it also introduces a tremendous amount of social interactions. And we're fortunate enough to both have this product hit the shelves this week, and also Ian is a contributor to much of that product. So we have both an inside view of the product and a chance for us to kind of go over and discuss what the new one includes. So let's dive right into it. So Ian, tell me a little bit about what the Lure of Power is.
So the Lure of Power kind of finishes off the fourth and final one of the Chaos Powers, Slaanesh. To me, that's really exciting. I'm obviously a disgusting, perverted British person, and therefore I love talking about Slaanesh. To me, I think probably maybe the most interesting of the Chaos Powers. It's your kind of classic medieval tales of kind of decadence. People love to sate themselves with all these kind of different good things to the point where they become addicted to them, and it kind of takes over their lives, and you know, they turn against the Empire in order to do anything to fulfill these pleasures, because effectively each time they go for a new hit, it becomes a little bit less pleasurable, and therefore they need to try some kind of new devious low in order to kind of bring back that first sense of the pleasure they got.
Yeah, this is actually one of the Chaos Gods I probably have the least familiarity with. But I kind of find maybe that's because it seems like one of the most subtle and complex ones to get in there and actually use. Have you had a lot of experience in using Slaaneshi parts in your games?
At the minute, in the game that we're playing through, we've actually got a kind of big Nurgle cult going. So it's been a little while since I've kind of brought one into my game myself, but for me, I think it's actually probably one of the easiest ones to use. And actually, part of what I wrote about was an example of some secret societies and kind of Slaaneshi / Chaos cults to give you a bit of an example of the kind of things you could use in your games. So there's a number of different examples in there, and effectively the way Slaanesh has been used by GW is that it should probably be the easiest one for you guys to bring into your different games, because it's probably the one that most citizens of the Empire would have not necessarily daily exposure to, but would be the one that is most familiar to them. Generally, if a cult in their town, village, city is exposed, odds on it's probably a Slaaneshi cult, especially amongst the kind of middle classes, mercantile classes, and the nobility.
That's kind of like going along the lines of that kind of promise for power, or that, you know, maybe I'll be a better I'll be a better linguist, or be able to talk my way into, or be more attractive and marry into a higher family or something like that. Like, to give them that kind of extra edge is kind of where the Slaaneshi influence can kind of come into play.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, with the kind of moneyed classes, there's a number of people, especially amongst the new mercantile classes, that have got a huge amount of coin, and they don't really know what to do with it. And again, amongst the people who are kind of coming into money, they want to see to be conspicuous spenders of their gold. And therefore, you know, they're buying into all these new pleasures and getting these new tastes. It's easy to become addicted and kind of wound up with the wrong people.
Yeah, actually, that makes great sense. So, Lester, do you want to go into a little bit of what the new supplement contains? And then I'd love to hear, Ian, some of your feedback on maybe where you contributed, or even also where you had what kind of components you find the most interesting from a gameplay mechanic perspective, or something you're looking forward to implementing in your games.
Yeah, sure.
Well, I just picked it up today, and it's pretty excellent. I've gotten about halfway through the Lure of Power book, and it comes like all the other Chaos Power supplements, the large supplements. So you get two books and several different components and cards. I believe there's 17 new creatures, or like that are based on Slaanesh. Obviously, you've got your Demonettes, and you've got Prince Sigvald, and a bunch of different pretty famous characters and demons that go along with the whole Slaaneshi theme.
Yeah, like similar to the Khorne of the Nurgle, there's each one. You've got the Keeper of Secrets, which is the greater demon of Slaanesh.
Yeah.
The Demonettes, which are kind of your more baseline demons. Yep. The Seekers and Fiends of Slaanesh, which kind of tie in the Steeds. You have the Slaaneshi cult members, and then several kind of named or special character Slaanesh demons and mortals.
Yeah, and you get a whole slew of different action cards that relate to Slaanesh. So, I mean,
actually, quite a few. If I saw that correctly, it was probably a good like 10 or 20 of them.
Yeah, there's a good stack. There's lots of them are spells, but some of them are combat actions or social. Quite a few social actions and like support actions as well. Several new, pretty interesting mutations I found. There's one called hypersensitivity or heightened sensitivity.
I saw that one. I like that.
Which is really awesome. It's pretty interesting. Every time you recover or gain wounds, fatigue, or stress, you either recover or gain an additional one. Pretty interesting flavor to that. Obviously, you get the marks of Slaanesh, and then there are 10 new careers, a few new focus and reputation feats. And then you also get one of my favorite things is they're really going with a noble theme, or they went with a noble theme in this product. So as a noble character, you can now take retainers if you are of a sufficient enough noble rank. So you can have a man at arms kind of as a NPC who follows you around and does your bidding, sort of. There's a master chef, there's a man at arms, a valet, a steward, and several others. And I find that to be really interesting. I'd love to see that actually in play as opposed to just in my own mind.
I think the retainers is, there's a couple new rule systems that are integrated into the new supplement that we'll get into in a little bit. But I think the introduction of retainers is going to be actually a lot of fun. I think a lot of people will start, if they have the money to afford them, it could be a very interesting way to add a little meat to your party, or have some servants who run around helping you out.
And just flavor wise, as far as being a noble, it makes sense to have retainers, to have minions that kind of follow you around and do your bidding. I mean, depending on how high in the pecking order you are, nobility is very convoluted in general, but in the Empire, it's extremely convoluted.
But before we get too far into the retainers, I do want to touch briefly on the fact that the other major component of the Slaanesh supplement is the kind of the Empire counterpart to that, which is the nobility within the Empire and nobility, and then everything that kind of goes along with it. So the retainers, like you're mentioning, and then there's a large emphasis on social interactions and social actions themselves. Social sparring, how to kind of create almost like a combat scenario out of a social interaction, where you kind of like lay shame onto characters by insulting them. And at a certain point, your shame level gets so high that you kind of back out of the encounter. And it sounded silly to me at first, but as I started reading through it, it started to kind of make sense, and I could see it coming into play. What are your guys' thoughts on kind of how the product as a whole? How do you feel that they kind of laid it out? Do you think those two are good? Is a good setup?
Well, I'll let Ian answer this because he was involved in it. I mean, it seems good to me. I haven't read the whole thing yet, though.
Yeah, I mean, those are things that I wasn't personally involved in, and the boat is actually yet to hit the shore, so my copy's not arrived yet. But they sound really interesting. I'd heard about some of that stuff.
Let's go a little bit into detail then. We can kind of dissect it some. The two books you get are The Lure of Power, which covers nobility and the empire, and the counterpart book, similar to all the other products, is The Liber Ecstatica, which is the Book of Pleasure, which covers Slaanesh, the demons, what Slaanesh is all about, all the statistics and abilities for the mortals and demon creatures. And then, similar to the other supplements, that one also offers the actual adventure that comes with the supplement, which is called Mirror of Desire. And that adventure is, largely uses, well, obviously the Slaaneshi content, the demons as the focus and the cults, but also integrates a lot of these new rules mechanics that have been incorporated around these social interactions. So the social interactions that get added are effectively, there's a, oh man, the stack of social and support cards that get incorporated in this one is pretty thick. The action cards, there are many, many, many of them. The social actions themselves, each character in an engagement, they kind of do like a duel. So, you know, maybe you're trying to push your motives while somebody else has different motives, and you might do kind of like a verbal sparring back and forth. And each character has a shame threshold, which is equal to your willpower plus your nobility rank. And I can talk about the nobility rank in a moment, but effectively, every time you fail or you are inflicted upon someone, you know, in your verbal spar, someone shames you, you take an insanity card face down, and it's almost like a temper. It's the verbal equivalent of a wound. And if your shame level exceeds your willpower plus your nobility level, you have to duck out. You've been shamed so badly, you either have to stop participating. You're no longer to push your goals or agenda. I can see that being a lot of fun instead of just trying to convince some noble or some lord to do what you want, especially if he doesn't want to. You could totally engage in this verbal sparring. I think it could be a blast. And it sounds, given that it's your willpower plus your nobility rank, it sounds like it can be nice and quick. It doesn't have to be a full-blown, you know, multi-tiered progress tracker to actually get something done. It can happen concisely.
Now, since I haven't read these rules yet, I was curious to know, does it seem conducive for using these social rules with non-noble characters? Like, what if you're not shamed by what a noble can say to you if you're some dirty gambler or something like that?
Ian, do you have any feedback on that?
I think from a personal perspective, I think it can work quite well across different characters. You know, if you've got a kind of military style character, as you go up in rank, you'll potentially get more fame. And again, you know, the nobles, they're the ruling classes. If you're being chastised by someone that high up, you know, you have to be a, you know, anyone apart from a criminal probably, you know, should be shamed into doing something, because effectively that's a person that could throw you straight into jail if you disobey them,
or just flog you on the spot, really.
Yeah,
I think the concept of shame was not necessarily only meant to be in that kind of nobility sense. I think it was more meant to be, you know, some version of pushing you out of the conversation, whether through actual shame, through humiliation, through being outwitted, or really whatever it is. But the term they've given it is shame.
I think it suits the whole Slaanesh thing, though, for sure.
It does. And it seems like it affects nobility and that kind of silver and gold tier characters the most. But I think it could be easily adapted to any kind of, who's agenda gets pushed in an argument.
Mm.
And you could even engage, you know, multiple characters. Like, you could have your group of characters arguing against a king, you know, or a lord somewhere. And, you know, as the lord is winning the argument, you know, your party is one at a time dropping out of the argument as their shame level hits its threshold until you have the one last PC arguing his point. You know, you can create some pretty neat dramatic scenarios with that. But let's touch quickly on the other new rule for the nobles. A lot of people noticed in the Omens of War expansion that the noble trait began appearing in a lot of the new career cards. So that continues in this one now. And effectively, any career that you are either in or have completed with the noble trait gives you one rank worth of nobility. So as an example, if you are in your first career with noble, you're noble rank one. If you have completed a career with the nobility trait and you're currently in one, that gives you nobility rank two. And they can go as high as six, which is effectively Karl Franz. But you know, a nobility rank of one, two, or even three is probably the upper limit of what most PCs might see. And so that can get added to your shame threshold, and additionally has several other benefits, especially when conversing with other nobles, getting them to do what you want, or even conversing with like people from the silver or brass tier, you can have several benefits. Nobility also offers quite a few benefits in the ability that you can actually start a character as a noble now. They provide rules. So, for example, if you've given your character, if you have a career that has the nobility trait, and you provide your character with the affluent wealth characteristic, you have the option of starting out as a noble, and that comes with a whole series of benefits, like you have a monthly stipend where you get paid out at one gold per nobility rank that you have. You also have several, like, you might have like an older lord who you owe patronage to, who might have you go out and doing biddings. You have people who may report to you. You can hire retainers. It's actually pretty robust, and it sounds like quite a bit of fun. I think we'll cover that in detail in one of our future rules sections, though.
Yeah, it does sound really interesting.
So what part are you guys looking forward to the most in this?
I'd like to read through the adventure quite a bit. I think that they've all been interesting. I think the one in The Horror of Heugadal is a great adventure, but I think it's really easy to see through as even if you're a remotely seasoned role player, it was really easy to see where everything was coming from. So I'd really be interested to see if this adventure is a little bit more, it has a few more twists and turns in it. I mean, considering it is Slaanesh and it's pretty secretive, you know, the cults and stuff like that.
Ian, are you familiar with the content of the adventure?
I don't think it's one our group playtested, actually. I might have had a read through of it at the time, but we definitely didn't play it. So it's something I'm looking forward to as well. And we've also got quite a mercantile character in our group as well, who's got quite a lot of cash flying around, so I'll be interested to see how he uses some of these noble rules as well, whether he goes about hiring retainers, because effectively we've got a big backstory going where he owns a couple of minor trading companies, a couple of warehouses. He's got people kind of working away for him in the background, and this effectively gives us some rules to formalize his backstory he's got going. So it'll be interesting to see how that pans out.
How have you guys handled retainers, or what are effectively retainers, previously, or how do you handle those?
Effectively, compared to the others, we don't want him to get kind of too far ahead in terms of gold. So we keep it quite light touch. We kind of bring it into the story when we need to. And effectively, from time to time, he will write some gold off of his character sheet in order to kind of purchase expansions so he can feed it in about how well he's doing. And then it's just used more in a story context. So if the group is stuck somewhere and they need a cart or a wagon to get them somewhere a little bit quicker, effectively
you know, Ragnar will call up one of his contacts and make sure a wagon is in the right place at the right time for a small donation off of his party sheet. So, you know, we just keep quite an informal thing on it because there are not a huge amount of rules for trading, etc. Obviously, some have been written by Ralph himself, who plays this character for Liber Fanatica. So occasionally we will we'll get those out. As I said, you know, we generally keep quite a light touch on it, but we may, you know, we'll probably use some of these rules, I'm sure.
It sounds like you guys use some similar concepts to how the retainers are being used now. The way they work now is you actually get a card for each retainer with statistics and a roster of the benefits that retainer can give you, in addition to how much this retainer costs you on a weekly or monthly basis. And the way the rules go for it is it's effectively a loyal retainer to your character. So within reason, this retainer will do whatever your PC asks them to do. But on the other hand, unlike somebody you might just pay a couple copper to go and run an errand for you, the retainer will, you know, he'll stick around and he will also voice his opinions if he's doing something that he wouldn't like. So they're kind of meant to actually be, you know, like kind of like a servant who voices their opinion periodically. So you can't just say, hey, go jump off that cliff. They're going to say, you know, really, I don't think I want to do that. And they might leave if they don't like you. You can fire them, rehire them, all sorts of stuff like that. But any actions that retainer is kind of hired to do is generally, you don't even need to make skill checks for it. You're just assumed that it'll be done at a quality level. So an example of that might be, you know, the valet, who's effectively an assistant, or maybe even a master chef. So the master chef, if you say, hey, okay, chef, go prepare us dinner, he will do an excellent job preparing mm-hmm. dinner. It's just assumed that it'll be done correctly. There's no role for that. Now, the fees that you pay to maintain that retainer also go into also take into account all the miscellaneous expenses that would be needed in order for that retainer to do normal level tasks associated with their trade. So, you know, it's not just their salary. It's also the cost of goods, the cost of travel, the things like that. It's pretty much you pay that coin amount and you get all the benefits of that retainer.
I really,
they try and simplify that. Now, of course, if you go off the deep end, you know, maybe you'll have to fork out some extra money.
Well, yeah, depending on the game master. I really want to get a halfling master chef.
make you a bunch of pies.
I just want a really fat noble character. I want to play one like that. Fat cat. Excellent. I'm also really excited about the secret societies in it. I think that's a really interesting, like, as a game master, I think it'll be really interesting to run my players into situations where they might, even against their knowledge, kind of start getting the eye of these secret societies on them, maybe getting a chance to join too.
So Ian, you particularly, you wrote a couple of the secret society sections, is that right?
Yeah, that is, yeah.
So tell us a little bit about secret societies and how they work in the Empire and how players might be able to fold them in to their stories.
Yeah, I mean, societies and kind of secret societies are quite interesting because of the way the Empire works. Obviously, it's quite medieval. Tax collection is kind of done by kind of people wandering around and knocking on doors, etc. And people, you know, want to try and avoid paying tax. And there's also people who want to just try and get away from the daily grind or get away from their wife, go and see friends, mistresses, you know, whoever in peace. And a lot of these societies appear to have been set up effectively to facilitate this kind of thing. You know, obviously, generally, as I mentioned before, for the kind of middle and upper social classes, you know, silver and gold tier, in general, the brass tier probably much less so involved in this kind of thing. They're probably too busy with their kind of daily drudgery or drowning their sorrows in the inn afterwards. Although I think a GM who thinks about it probably can come up with some good societies for disgruntled brass tier people. There'll certainly be less of them. I think good ones to probably come up with for brass tier people are probably more political societies where they go moan about the state of things and maybe kind of try and commit to overthrowing the existing government or, you know, in their town, village, whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
But for the silver and gold tier, there's a much kind of greater array of things that the GM can use, you know, from anything from a perfectly innocent little kind of club for like-minded people. Effectively, just a guild, for example, could be used as a society. That's effectively the way it would work. So you might have the Guild of Brewmasters in your town, or metal workers, boat builders. You know, the list is endless, depending on what the industries are in that town. As long as there's probably more than two or three people doing it, there will probably be a guild of some sort in that place. You know, where those people can talk about trying to buy items for trade or for their industry together, etc. But obviously, there's a lot of places which are effectively fronts.
Mm-hmm.
Anything from thieves' guilds in kind of mercantile groups, or even kind of darker and more heretical things, which we've gone into a little bit more detail here for kind of the tack for the secret society section in Law of Power.
So when I think of Slaanesh, the first thing I remember is the old Warhammer model, which had the goat face and the big boobs and all the naked demonettes and all the sensual and kind of crazy sexual hermaphroditic creatures that kind of went along with it. And I noticed a absence of some of the more risque Slaaneshi components in these books. How do you guys feel about that?
I think in recent years, whatever book you look at, GW has kind of gone to some extent, I think perhaps realizing that quite a few, not necessarily kids, but teenagers, play the games, are just kind of covering up a little bit and just kind of providing kind of hints of what goes on, as opposed to being kind of more blaringly obvious. I think you just need to look at the models that are available to see how they've kind of moved on over the years, just to see how things have subtly changed over the last kind of 10 to 15 years with what's going on there.
And there's still pictures in here that are a little risque, you know. I mean, it's not, this game is not necessarily played by children, but I mean, Warhammer has an appeal to younger people, and I think that's all that they're doing is, you know, I mean, I don't necessarily think that this book should have been full on pornographic, you know, even though that is pretty much what Slaanesh is about. But it's beyond that. It's not just a, Slaanesh doesn't just represent sexual things. Slaanesh represents all sorts of sensation-driven activities, like doing drugs or even bathing in gold, even just loving gold so much that you'd want to collect lots of gold, or gorging yourself on food. So,
you brought up drugs right there, which was one that a lot of people have been speculating. You know, would we see drugs in this expansion? And well, the answer is no, but this seems like the spot where that may have had a home if they're going to get incorporated into the game.
Mm-hmm.
I think again, it's trying to get a product that is broad, and as Lester was saying, there's, you know, so many new things which they brought in. I think Slaanesh is actually probably more interesting than it was 10, 15 years ago, when it was much more of a kind of sexual thing, and nowadays more about these kind of variety of pleasures.
Mm-hmm. I think you hit on it right there. That's exactly it. I think that, yeah, it used to be sex was the focus of Slaanesh, or at least the most public side of Slaanesh, and now it's the excess in all things.
Yeah.
You know, you could be a lover of art to the point where you really love art. physically and mentally. I don't know. I mean, you can. The funny thing is you can go so many crazy places with Slaanesh that it's impossible to go wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, if you want to bring in drugs and kind of other trippy kind of things as this, you know, feel free to. When it comes to putting a book out there, obviously, you know, most of the GW stuff is kind of T for teen or kind of 12 plus, and
yeah,
you look at kind of films and video games with drug references in there, and they rarely kind of hit that rating. So I think in combination with everything else that's mentioned, it would probably be pretty tough for, you know, publishers to be able to explain that.
Yeah.
To,
well, and they've already also released the intoxicated card or the intoxicated condition. So, I mean, there's all sorts of things you can do with stuff that has already been released with this game to create drugs in your game, if that's really what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I'd say that if people want to house rule it, you know, if people want to start doing that kind of thing, the more they take, effectively, you know, I don't think you just only have to stick to one intoxication card, effectively duplicate it and just keep on sticking it on that person, the more and more intoxicated they become. There's things you can do in that sphere, totally.
If you guys need, I was just thinking of movies and things like that that get you inspired for kind of Slaanesh-y type content outside of the porn industry, is the movie Eyes Wide Shut, which is almost porn, but
that's really good with the secret societies too.
Secret society, and it definitely deals with the excess of pleasures, and in this particular case it's the physical pleasures, but the secret society aspects of it so perfectly fits my vision of what Slaanesh might kind of feel like in the real world.
Yeah, definitely a aspect of Slaanesh for sure.
Yeah, I think that was like a late 90s film. I think that Tom Cruise and I forget who the lead actress is.
Paul Kidman, I think.
Yeah. Was it? I thought it was, yeah. Okay, good. Good call. So definitely check that one out. Well, I guess we could, in theory, then add that to the Warhammer-inspired movies. Cool. Well, anything else we want to cover on the lure of power while we're still dissecting it?
Well, there are 10 new careers, I believe, too, that need to be touched on.
Oh, yeah, touch on those. I got the list, or I had the list.
I really like the FOP. I thought that was really, really awesome.
I'm a little unclear what a FOP is. I've heard the name, but I'm not sure.
It's like a layabout, right? Pretty much.
A FOP. I think it's quite a British thing.
Yes.
It's kind of like a kind of a dandy, a bit of a kind of. So in the kind of late 18th, 19th century, it was quite a kind of quite a common thing where there would be not necessarily the eldest son, but one of the sons would effectively be not a black sheep, but would be very forthright with his money, spending a lot on making sure he's always up with the latest fashions, but at the same time being very lazy when it came to any real work.
Okay, that picture makes a lot more sense now. That they chose a good picture for that then. It's kind of a guy lounging about with a whole bunch of cool things, and he looks like he's like hanging out in the courtroom drinking and playing with his toys.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he's like a layabout, basically, who likes to spend money. But I love the flavor on his ability. The career ability for the flop or for the FOP is once per session, they can make a free disengage maneuver and can do it any time, even when it's not their turn. Run away!
Yeah, absolutely. So the careers was something I wrote, actually. So I'm pleased you like it.
Yeah, I think it's great. I love the FOP. And you got Noble Lord, which is an advanced career. So that's, I'm assuming they're adding that in to add more options for rank building with the nobles. And it seems like a pretty high leveled noble, actually.
Well, you can actually have your Noble Lord. You can be a lesser Noble Lord or even a Noble Lord who doesn't even own land yet. There's several different kind of tiers of nobility, and I think actually your success rate, or I guess your sophistication level of being a noble, is governed by your nobility score, not so much by what career you're in.
But
so if you
But what I'm saying is that it is an advanced career, so you have to be at least like second level of noble in order to reach that one. You got courtier, which is, I'm assuming, somebody who spends a lot of time at court and is like vying for political power within a court. That's what I'm assuming that is.
Do you have any expansion on that, Ian?
So again, courtier is perhaps more of a kind of medieval European thing, particularly taking my inspiration from the kind of Medici courts of Northern Italy in the kind of 14th, 15th century. You've got a lot of people who are not necessarily nobles, although probably will be in some sort, who are kind of vying for power, you know, looking for patronage, looking to move their own family up the greasy pole, trying to get in there with all the right people. They're probably very scheming people always. You know, when things are going wrong, they're like Teflon, nothing sticks.
They're hangers on, right? But they're the first to exit a scene of problem.
Yeah, I think if you have a noble in the party and someone else who was a courtier, or playing a scenario that involves some kind of government thing, having a courtier around would be a really interesting role to play.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. You could very easily create an adventuring party who is the people who would be at somebody's court. Yeah. And they would all very naturally fit together and have some very interesting dynamics.
Yeah, well, I was reading and I was thinking about being able to create a party that was like a noble lord and his retainers. You could totally do that too.
That would be really interesting.
And you can have it so that a total pain towards the noble as well. So, you know, if you've got quite a frivolous, or kind of even, you know, leaning towards the kind of slashy influence noble who's, you know, big on his food and other, you know, other things, have the courtier being a high ranking member of the clergy.
Ooh.
But that's, you know, as you mentioned the courtier, I think to that, I think it was Showtime or was it HBO who did the Tudors, that TV series. And that was a great setup or influence if you need some visual representation of what kind of a medieval court looks like, and the kind of people who kind of come in and visit, the kind of people who stay almost as permanent fixtures, and the people who assist the Lord. I think that's a very, very similar style.
Yeah, I was going to say Littlefinger from Game of Thrones. Would you consider him to be a courtier? Yeah, he's got a lot of money and he's trying to vie for power. So that's kind of how I envision that. But
so the last noble career is the ambassador, which is also, I can, you know, that fits perfectly. Do you have a little background on kind of what the Warhammer ambassador's life is like?
Yeah, it's life of travel, really, I think, probably for the most part. And it's an interesting one because effectively, you know, this one is not limited to being human. You can be any one of the races. So, you know, you may arrive in Altdorf and go to court and find you've got kind of elven and dwarven guys there also giving advice to people as well. And it's the kind of person that you could definitely meet on the road as well. It could lead to an interesting adventure where you have to effectively do some escort missions.
So how does an ambassador differ from an envoy?
I think an ambassador is a little higher on the pecking order than an envoy.
Yes, this is down as an, I think it's down as an advanced career. So it's, and I don't know whether the special rule for it is there still.
Very similar, is that correct?
Yeah, as effectively an envoy would be probably the first person you would send, and if you send an ambassador, it's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, really big deal.
You really annoyed the person, or there's really something important they have to say. By that point, you're wheeling the big guns out.
Okay.
Unlike an envoy, which could effectively, you know, carry a note from like a noble or a courtier, if you're sending an ambassador, it, you know, they carry the word and the power to literally represent, you know, a king, prince, etc.
Yeah, they're up there. I like the Master Thief too. That was cool.
Well, there are actually five other other careers that were outside of this supplement that also have the noble trait, which are the captain, the duelist, the knight, the pistolier, and the dilettante. The dilettante's the only one that doesn't actually have noble in its career traits, but they indicate that you can swap out the specialist with noble if it suits you. So, Lester, what were some of those other careers, the new ones, the Master Thief?
You got Master Thief, which is obviously the next one in the Thief line, I would assume.
What does a thief do? I'm not familiar with it.
they pick noses as well as locks. You've got the Demagogue, which is awesome. So
that's an interesting one. I find as I'm looking through the supplement, I'm realizing how little I know about court life. And some of these careers, while I've heard the terms before, I'm not very familiar with what they do or why they do it. So I'd love to hear some more about the Demagogue.
So the Demagogue actually probably isn't someone you'd necessarily get at court. In fact, probably not. The way I originally wrote him was probably that you would. And then when I was discussing it with the guys at FFG, we kind of turned it around because we thought there were perhaps too many courtly characters there to have him as just like a real... not necessarily crazy guy, but like someone who's had a real power of speech, but had a kind of slightly perhaps mad look to their eyes,
like Bill O'Reilly.
So they're effectively kind of on a similar line to the Agitator.
Yes.
Okay.
With a greater power of speech. You know, they've moved up that social ladder. They're far more persuasive than that. You know,
this is it kind of like a political pundit?
No, not necessarily. You know, if you think perhaps Monty Python and the Holy Grail, and you've got the kind of guys going around preaching their kind of odd messages in mm-hmm. towns, you know, he would be the leader of a group.
Okay.
You know, if you see some kind of group of religious fanatics or, you know, political fanatics, he'll be their leader at that point.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
gotcha.
Rather than just being on the street shouting at people, looking like a bit of a weirdo, he's managed to convince some people to join him and actually has some kind of, you know, albeit probably very limited kind of, power of you know, being able to persuade people and mm-hmm. have a small group kind of following him in all likelihood.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think that one actually surprised me to see that in there. And whenever I hear Demagogue, I always think, because they throw that around in political speech all the time, and I would totally say that Bill O'Reilly is a demagogue.
Well, I find it interesting that we're starting to see now some advanced careers of some of the rather strange and esoteric base level careers.
I like it.
It's cool. It's not something I'd expect. I mean, if you told me that the Agitator was going to get an advanced career, I wouldn't have been able to tell you what it would have been. But now that I see the demagogue and have it kind of explained, it makes perfect sense. You know, it'd be nice to see in somebody who's an agitator and wants to keep doing that and have somewhere to go.
Yeah, totally.
So now where does the rat catcher go? I want the advanced career for the rat catcher.
He becomes a guildmaster after he stabs the guildmaster in the back. Of course. No, actually, that's another one. Guildmaster of the careers. I was curious, is Ralph, do you think he will go into the guildmaster career, considering how you'd explained what his character's kind of like in the games you guys play?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he will. Effectively, I don't know whether at some point, you know, they'll go one further, but guildmaster is effectively the next stage up from merchant, and it encompasses basically kind of master merchant or merchant lord, as well as actual physical guild master. I think as part of the description we said that you don't necessarily have to be in charge of a guild to be a guild master.
Okay. That's just kind of the name you went with for that. Then you've got a herald a herald could act as a retainer as well. That's just they basically keep noble records and kind of like announce nobles in courts and stuff like that, as far as I understand a herald's job.
Yeah, it's another option, I think, for kind of envoy or agent to go into, as opposed to ambassador.
as a career, or potentially even you could go Envoy Herald Ambassador as a career thing. It probably is a kind of more intermediate level.
Okay. And then we've got the Judicial Champion, which I think is interesting to see because they did Liber Fanatica touched on him in the last one too.
I thought that sounded familiar.
They brought that in there. So, but they do talk a bit about law. That's something that we kind of skipped over when we were discussing the books. There's a little section in there on the law of the Empire, but it's quite convoluted as well. So they kind of do leave it a little bit up to the game master's discretion. Cause I mean, it varies from all the different regions cause it's left up to the lords basically to decide, maybe the more mundane laws, but it is kind of, it's all over the place. But the Judicial Champions, I guess his basic shtick is that he goes around and enacts laws, probably executes people and stuff like that.
Is that, I mean, not to bring another Game of Thrones reference, but you know, when somebody calls for a champion to represent them in a duel, is that the kind of scenario where this guy would come into play?
Partly, but effectively, with more of a kind of legal thing. So effectively anyone in the Empire has right to trial by combat as opposed to trial by judge. So obviously most judges are probably fat nobles. Or people who've been in that kind of legal career for their lifetime. They're not fighters. So they have a designated champion effectively who can come in and lay the smackdown.
So you're kind of like on staff of some fat noble, and you just kind of like help protect him physically, as a bodyguard when you're not doing anything, and then when you get called up to do a fight, you're ready to roll.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a very good example in the Black Library books in the Witch Hunter series by C.L. Werner. There's three of them, I think. I think the champion appears in possibly all of them, certainly the last one of the three, if I remember right. But if you look up those books, there's a good example in there.
Sweet. Cool. I'm familiar with those. I haven't read them, but I've heard good things.
And there's only one more career here, and the last career is the minstrel. So, you know, Sir Robin ran away, that kind of thing.
Obviously the only thing we need to talk about with the minstrel is how do you get a goblin pet? Ian, you may not have seen the picture yet. There's a picture of the minstrel strumming his lute, and he's got a little goblin on a leash at his feet who looks, or it might even be a snotling, but it, I instantly need to know how to get a snotling pet and where are the stats for it.
Well, I think the stats for snotlings in the in the books.
it looks so sad and beat up, like it's just been wailed into submission by this horrible music from the minstrel that it just can't bring the will to fight anymore.
I really like the flavor
kick.
I really like
as well.
Yeah, totally. It's like a monkey, you know, but he's a snotling. But I like the flavor because a minstrel can be pretty much active in any of the social tiers, because there's going to be minstrels at courts, but there could be buskers or bards who travel from town to town to make coin and pass on information and learn information. And I think that's pretty cool. And I noticed there's an action card in here, which is basically smash your musical instrument over the head of your opponent, which I thought was pretty funny.
Well, let's kind of get towards a wrap up here, and let's do a quick roundtable on biggest letdown and what you were the most happy with in the supplement. Right. And I know Ian, you haven't seen it yet, but from what you've heard so far and what you know of the supplement, let's start with you, Ian. What do you think?
I'm pleased with the stuff I did. I had a great time writing it.
Well, obviously the stuff you did was the best part.
And I think, you know, I'm looking forward to having some of my guys use some of the new careers, some of the new actions, and perhaps looking to get some retainers as well, and then playing through the adventure at some point as well. I'm sure I'll be able to bring that into our current campaign. So I think there's a lot of cool new stuff in there, which I'm looking forward to getting the supplement as soon as the boat chugs its way across the Atlantic.
Just hope it doesn't hit an iceberg, right?
Yeah.
So what do you and from what you've heard or what you were hoping to see now that you know what the supplement contains, any, were you let down in any way, or are you missing something that you were really hoping to see here?
Yeah, I think a lot of people probably were expecting to see addiction rules of some kind, not necessarily drugs. I think it didn't have to be very long, just a kind of couple of paragraphs of how you might get addicted to something, and then just some brief rules of how you might recover from that addiction or be treated for it might have been kind of cool, but never mind. I think you can probably treat that stuff in a very similar way to disease.
Yeah, but I was thinking, like, even a sidebar like they did with the mounted combat rules, it was very simple and clean and clear. And I mean, they could have done something very simple, I think, for the addiction, because I mean that would be my biggest upset too, is that they didn't add addiction or drugs into it, because that's just kind of apart from the sexual thing, that's really where I see, you know, like alcoholism and things like that being totally addicted to excess from a noble standpoint. That's how I see Slaanesh. But yeah, I'd say that's probably my biggest letdown.
What about your highest praise for it?
I would have to say the retainers was something I didn't see coming, and I was really happily surprised by that. But I think my biggest excitement for it is how they've gone into detail about the way the imp, like, it's written really well from what I've read so far, and they detail how the political structure works in the empire and nobility, and seeing how I mean, I understand nobility to a degree, but it's from more so a historical research sense as opposed to actually living in a place where they're, you know, aren't necessarily subject to nobles. We kind of are in Canada, but not really. And that was always something I wanted to add more life to my games from that aspect, having, you know, the different nobles. And I'm really looking forward to delving into that and using that in my games.
Cool. I think my favorite part, similar to both you guys, the retainers was, again, like you said, a surprise to me. And that was a really, real pleasant one. And I think that's something that we may even see more of in the future. Maybe they can even add some additional retainer type cards, because the ones they provided were pretty comprehensive, but they left a lot of other kind of personally owned NPC options available to you. But I was also pleasantly surprised by the social combat rules, the whole shaming aspect and kind of the dueling of words. That was something I was not particularly excited about going into the supplement, and kind of felt it was going to be tacked on and filler, more because it needed to be there, because they wanted it to be there, not because it really needed to. And after reading it, I feel much more comfortable that it's a viable social tool to use, not for every single encounter, but it seems a lot more fun than just roll your charm check and, okay, yeah, things worked out. You can really kind of get in there and have a little bit of back and forth without building the whole progress tracker for a single social encounter. So I was really pleased to see that, and then all the action cards that kind of support it. So I think that's actually quite a bit of fun. I don't really have any huge letdowns outside of just something completely kind of random and personal. I don't really care for the artwork that they chose for the Demonette and and I think it's the Seeker. They did. I can't. Ian, do you recall that artist's name who does the more of the watercolor with all the yellows, reds, and blacks?
Oh, no, probably the only artist I can ever name off the top of my head is John Blanche. He does.
No, not. I know it's not him. Anyway, someone's going to hear this and go, dude, how can you forget? Because a lot of people love this guy, and he does some really cool stuff, but I kind of have a gripe that it's the only time they've used his art style, and it contrasts with every other token that's been created so far. There's great Demonette artwork everywhere. Why not use that and they chose this other artwork. So it seemed kind of out of place and a little quirky. But, you know, I can't complain. So with that, any last comments on the Lure of Power?
Not really, no. I'm actually really excited to finish reading it and, you know, seeing. I mean, I haven't really looked through all the cards or anything like that even, so.
Cool. I think when our next episodes, we're going to go into detail on some of the new rules mechanics and talk a bit about the adventure and kind of do a deeper dive as we kind of explore it further. Ian, any last thoughts?
No, go enjoy it.
All right. Thanks, man. Mm-hmm. So that'll wrap it up for this episode of the Reckless Dice Podcast. We'll be back in 2 weeks with our next episode. Be sure to comment on the site at recklessdice.com or shoot us an email at recklessdice@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Reckless Dice. Till next time, guys. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Cheers.